Go into any local coffee shop or talk with any farmer, and the topic of water is probably going to be brought up. When is it going to rain? What's the radar doing? How does this dry spell compare to that one of the 80s? Any of this sound familiar? This is because across the prairies, water availability and utilization is one of the main determinants of yield, and everything we do on our farms depends on water and the water cycle. Welcome to the Wheat Profit Podcast. My name is Carmen Prang, and I'm the Agronomy Extension Specialist with Sask Wheat. Today, we are going to be talking all things hydrology with Philip Harder, a research associate with the Center for Hydrology at the University of Saskatchewan.
Welcome, Philip, and thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, Philip, you grew up on a farm around Clavett and then went on to study at the U of S in physical geography, focusing your PhD on stubble, snow, soil, atmosphere interactions on the Canadian prairies. Can you tell us a bit more about your background and what got you interested in hydrology?
Sure. I grew up on a family farm just outside of Saskatoon. And I don't know, as a kid, you tend to actually pay attention to your environment sometimes. One key period of time was the drought in the early 2000s. It really opened my eyes to the precariousness of the Canadian prairies and water. You know, there's other things that kind of got my interest going in terms of how water moves around in the landscape and everything. This is like this sort of little idea that percolates through your mind. And then coming out of high school, it's sort of like, well, what do you want to do next? And without real clear ideas, somehow I ended up going into arts and science. And very quickly in there, I realized that water was something that was of interest. And so, yeah, even though I was not doing an ag degree, I still somehow managed to always end up finding my summer jobs somewhere in the ag sector. So, you know, loading rail cars at Cargill was one summer, and then planting seed potatoes and harvesting them another. And so throughout that summertime experiences and then going back and studying about water, it really kind of kept this ball rolling that there's a lot to be understood more than it currently is around so how water and crops and agriculture in general interact.
Perfect. Well, that gives us a leeway to just jump right in. So we know that some crops use more water than others. You know, peas and lentils are efficient users of water, but they use less than our wheat, canola, and corn crops. And obviously things like root structure, heat, genetics, those also all play a factor. So can you talk a little bit more about how much our crops are actually using and where is it coming from? Are we mostly dependent on that in-season moisture, or how critical is our winter snowfall?
Well, the wonderful thing about crops, water, agriculture, and everything is that everything varies. Nothing is very consistent. There's a lot of work that's gone into, say, understanding the water use efficiency, and peas and lentils, very efficient users of water. But at the end of the day, they also use a whole lot less water than things like wheat and corn and canola, which have completely different rooting systems and access completely different portions of the soil profile. We're doing a fair bit of work on trying to understand some of these things. So there's a sort of general idea that rainfall equals crop production. And obviously that's the case. We see a rain happen, we see a response in our crops. But the more sort of subtle and long-term component of it is our soil moisture. Trying to disentangle where is the water coming from, how much is going into production is kind of a tricky thing. So we've been looking at some observations from some of our research sites, just mostly south of Saskatoon, near Clavette and Keniston. And over time, we're building up this data set. And, you know, some years, in-season rainfall can be, you know, 90% of our crop water use, and the remainder comes from our soil moisture. But we also have situations like 2017, we've got data from Keniston, where our canola crop, it used nearly 250 millimeters of water, while rainfall that year was 67 millimeters. So in that situation, 75% of our crop water use was coming from sources other than rainfall. Trying to understand where that other portion is coming from is hard. So snowfall is a big component of it. The problem with snow is that it's a completely different set of hydrology. You've got snow accumulation in winter, and then we have to go through snowmelt, and then is it going to run off or infiltrate into the frozen soils? And how much of that even actually makes it into the growing season that survives a bare soil evaporation between snowmelt and the start of the season? At the end of the day, it's quite variable. In a wet summer, the rainfall will overwhelm any snowfall contributions. In a dry situation, snow is going to play a huge role. All dependent on did it actually snow the year before, because it's the prairies and everything varies.
True. And I like how you just touched on variability, because as we know, we can get anywhere from 200 to 800 millimeters of water or moisture in a season. And so as farmers, this is really difficult to be able to predict going in and be able to base our management practices on that. So as I've heard you talk about before, as farmers, we need to think about how we can manage our surfaces. So our crop residues and our stubble can maybe help us deal with some of this drastic variability. So how does stubble and residue management influence crop and water availability?
From a hydrology perspective, we always want to think about the water balance. So in terms of what goes in must come out, or there's a change in storage. When we think, how can we manipulate some of these things? We're trying to think in those terms. So can we change what's going in? Because that could potentially increase storage or availability. Can we reduce what's going out? Because that's going to maximize the most for crops. And so when we look at stubble, when we are managing stubble, what we're doing there is we're changing the amount of snow accumulation. Blowing snow, once it removes the snow out of the field, we leave tall stubble, it keeps it there. It cuts down on sublimation losses, which can be quite significant in this environment. So stubble management changes the input of water into our soils. On the other hand, residue management, it does have some influence, obviously, in terms of how it can improve infiltration, mostly by keeping water on the landscape rather than running off immediately. But that's kind of a second order factor. The biggest factor that it has is it's cutting down bare soil evaporation. So we're not losing water through evaporation in that situation. So yeah, with these two levers, number one, changing the water coming in, and number two, reducing how much is leaving.
So you touched on it a bit, but from your perspective, what can we do to manipulate our soil water on our farm? So more specifically, looking at drought, we've been in a couple of dry years already. So can we cut our stubble higher? Can we leave residue, crop rotation? Can you touch on all of those things?
Sure. It's kind of a chicken egg situation when it comes to stubble heights. If there is no water, crops don't grow. We're going to end up with short crops, and you don't really have a huge opportunity to manipulate things. It's a bit of a tricky one sometimes, but at the end of the day, if we are in a water limited situation, a water stress situation, which is the normal situation for the vast majority of Western Canada, the higher you leave your stubble, the more snow you'll keep on the landscape. It's really dependent upon the year. What we do to the stubble doesn't matter if it doesn't snow, but it generally snows. This is a thing that happens quite regularly. And the wonderful thing about snow is that it accumulates over time. We have an entire winter season. So even if there's minimal snowfall, we generally will have some sort of snowpack. In addition, by leaving the stubble higher, it kind of creates the situation where it depends on your landscape. So if you are downwind of a pulse crop, you are going to be trapping all the snow that's blowing off of that. At the end of the day, you can have huge gains in terms of water equivalent when you have taller stubble heights. There's some work we did back in the day looking at, say, comparing Saskatoon and Swift Current. And so on average, 1 centimeter increase in stubble height would equal another millimeter of water into your soil. But within that, you know, there's a huge, that's the average response. Some years you wouldn't see anything, other years you'd see twice as much. In terms of crop residues, it's a bit trickier because that has implications for long-term land management. You're not going to be able to instantly have a residue cover 1 year if you didn't have it the year before. So it's one of those long-term things. In terms of from a water perspective, residues will not generally hurt you. So what you see on the landscape in terms of context for what it's doing for soil evaporation, a rule of thumb, which obviously is going to be wrong, but for every 10% increase in crop residue cover, you will see a 5% decrease in soil evaporation. So, you know, if you're starting off with fairly open, bare soils, you have a large opportunity to reduce the amount of a soil evaporation that way. Putting all those things together, it gets a little bit complicated. There's all sorts of new opportunities these days to manage our residues and our stubbles in ways that we never had in the past. The one thing that I've been keeping an eye on lately is, say, looking at stripper header stubble. So this is where we have the stripping of seeds off of the stem, and what you end up with is basically the tallest possible stubble height that you could manage. I've been in some fields with on the order of 90 centimeter tall stubble. And those ones, they're catching every single bit of snow that is falling, and it's still there. And so, you know, we're talking about, you know, on the order of 100 millimeters of water equivalent in those fields versus adjacent fields that are around, you know, 40 millimeters. And that's some observations I did out in Consort earlier this week.
Yeah, that's definitely all great information. And I definitely encourage all farmers to weigh their pros and cons. Something that might benefit our water in our soil and our hydrology also might have effects on other parts of our cropping systems. So Saskweed actually joined up with Alberta Wheat Commission and the Manitoba Crop Alliance. And we have an article out that talks about straw management and residue management and all the pros and cons with that. So I encourage you to check out that side of things as well before you make any decisions on your farm. So let's maybe talk about other practices that we've seen done. So maybe not as common anymore, but you still drive down the highway and you see that a producer has taken time to push ridges in their field to capture some of that blowing snow. Maybe they've even gone as far as putting up snow fences and things like that. So are these practices capturing enough moisture to actually make it worth it?
You're going to hate this answer, but it depends. It's really depends upon the weather and the specific conditions of that season. They did a lot of work on this back in the 80s. And at the time, some years, yes, there was a gain, and some years it was not. So from a hydrology scientific perspective, this is a practice that would be classified as unreliable. That all work was all done with the economics of the 80s. Update to today, everything costs more. I don't know where those numbers would shake out at. Will it catch you more snow in the field? Yes. Is it worth it? I don't know. It's not going to harm your moisture situation. It's a lot of work. There's a lot of diesel that goes into it. The stuff that I've seen more recently in terms of snow ridging, yeah, like this is what we're doing along the highways in some areas. And in terms of, say, avoiding snow moving into yards and roads and stuff, sure, great. Yes, it's going to make a difference. In terms of capturing more snow in the landscape, who knows? Generally, what we're seeing is these things happen on the edges of fields. How much of that water is going to be infiltrating in place, or is it going to be running off immediately to a drainage system, which in our ditches? So there's kind of these weird sort of spatial relationships that do kind of get in the way of making those things effective. And yeah, snow fences, there's a lot more sweat that goes into that, but you're not going to be burning as much diesel. You can be a little bit more strategic in some of those locations as well. But yeah, it's when it comes to snow management, there's no limit to creativity out there. At the end of the day, if you're doing anything to make your surface rougher, you're trying to create some sort of disturbance, you to basically the wind flow field is what you're manipulating, you will end up with more water on your landscape.
So a question I always get as an agronomist, and I'm sure you've heard this question a lot too, is does row spacing matter as much as height for your stubble?
In terms of snow retention, it doesn't as much as height. There are all these different variables that do contribute to defining an outcome. But in terms of sensitivity, height is the biggest one. Row spacing is by far secondary. When snow blows across a landscape, it interacts with the surface kind of in very much an aerodynamic sense. So you have to think about, you know, if you want to get into like fluid dynamics and stuff. So you have a rough surface, things get more turbulent, there's more drag at the surface, things drop out. It's blowing across the stubble. It's not blowing down into it or anything like that. And so height is very much the first order control on how much snow is kept on the landscape.
So now that we maybe have everyone thinking about their management practices and maybe planning for what they want to change and what they want to do for this upcoming season, part of this planning is maybe knowing what you already have for moisture right now. So you said you can do that through a snow survey. So how do you do a snow survey? What is it? And what do you recommend for how to do it?
If you want to know how much snow is on your landscape, there's not a lot of models or remote sensing that can give a really good answer that actually reflects what's happening in your local situation, unfortunately. As I've said, blowing snow is very sensitive to your particular crop stubble and your particular weather patterns that you've experienced that year. So to do the best job of capturing what's going on, you need to do a snow survey. And so this is basically doing sort of coincident measurements of snow depth and density. There's a couple principles that you want to kind of apply. You have to find a part of your field or your area that you think is representative for what you want to understand. And you need to go for a walk. Get your rulers, pick a transect. If you want to track it over time, you know, identify it with some stakes. Every 3 paces, take a measurement and do that for at least 100 meters. Every 5 to 10 of your depths, you want to take a density measurement. And so density is basically, we want to take a known volume of snow. So I have a snow tube. I bore it through the snowpack. I get the cylinder. I measure the length of that cylinder. So I get a known volume. And then I weigh that bit of snow. And then water has a wonderful constant density. So divide by that and we get sort of the percent water content of our snow. Fresh snow, it starts off at around approximately 10% water. By the time we hit snow melt, we generally expect to see on the order of 30 to 35% water in our snowpack. Density can be fairly uniform, but it's not constant. So it can vary with depth. And so we need to take a bunch of densities at different depths, kind of get that relationship sorted out. And then we sort of pull that together with our depths, and then we can get kind of a sense of the average snow water equivalent on our landscape. It's a lot of unit conversion at the end of the day. I've got a spreadsheet that I often share with people who are interested. That's, I think, on my website, or I can send it to you. It's basically go out, get some exercise, measure the snow depth, get some snow densities. That is the way that you can get a good sense of water on your landscape.
Well, I look forward to if anyone actually goes out and does this, tag Sasquatch, tag Philip, let us know how it goes. Like you said, the steps are on your website and all the conversions and things like that. So it'll make it easier and good just to have an idea going into the season, how much you have. That can affect a lot of management decisions, everything from your seeding rate to if you have herbicide carryover issues, everything kind of links back to that water cycle. So always good to know what you have on your fields. So that's been some great information that you have shared with us so far. So looking into 2023, what are your prospects for the year and what can producers kind of expect, do you think?
It's been a tough couple of years, especially on the more western side of the province in Saskatchewan here. What I'm seeing out my window is kind of a repeat of the last 2 years. We went into winter dry. If anything, we went into winter drier this last year than the year before. That heat dome killed off the crops early on and actually didn't use us up as much of that soil moisture that was there. It's kind of a bit of a Groundhog Day situation. We went from dry, unfrozen soils to basically instant winter for most of the region. We've got a decent snowpack and it's dry beneath. So I expect that we're going to have very good soil infiltration for the most part. There will be variations in that, obviously. And so, yeah, I see that we will have a base of moisture that will sustain a good portion of crop growth. It's still going to depend a lot upon getting that rainfall to keep things going. Things change quickly. Like, look at Manitoba last year. You know, they went from a record drought for themselves to flooding. No one can predict that with accuracy here. I think we're set up well for the prairies. Water deficit is a consistent thing. This isn't new to anyone, and it's not going to change. You know, water will be a limiter, but I think we're not completely hooped because we've got such high infiltration potential at the moment.
So looking into spring, what is the ideal situation that would happen to get that most moisture to get a good start to the season?
Sure, we've got snow on the ground, but snow on the ground does not equal water in the ground. And so that transition is quite critical to, you know, a significant portion of our soil moisture recharge. You have to kind of think about it in terms of frozen soil infiltration processes. So the ideal situation is we had a dry, empty soil column in fall. The transition from fall to winter didn't leave any sort of soil saturation at the surface. We don't have any saturated layer. There's going to be portions of down towards Moose Jaw, where they had a big dump and melt right at the beginning, that this could be a common Peking factor. But no matter how dry it is beneath, if you have a saturated layer at the surface, not really much is going to be getting through. Yeah, the ideal situation is, number one, things are dry. Number two, we have snow, which for the most part we do. And number three, the melt needs to be slow. The longer the melt, the more opportunity it is for snow to get into the soil. That's a bit interesting. The physics behind snow melt can give you all sorts of outcomes. The later the melt, the faster the melt. It's kind of this thread the line. The later the melt, the faster the melt, the more runoff, but you're going to have a shorter period between snow melt and seeding. Ideally, we would start melting around now when the sun is not quite as high in the sky, so we don't have quite as much solar radiation hitting things to drive melt in an aggressive way. And yeah, and when melt does happen, we want it to be slow. We want things to melt during the day and then at least partially refreeze at night. So it gives a chance for, you know, the soil to absorb what happened. When we have rapid melt, where we have sustained days of, you know, above zero temperatures day and night, things can go very quickly. And that's when we have those intense snowmelt runoff events.
Well, we are all hoping for a great 2023 season, so let's hope that is the ideal situation. So if you could leave us with one piece of advice for producers as they are planning their crop season to maximize that water use, what would your one piece of advice be?
Well, it's hard. As a hydrologist, I tend to think about this sort of long-term thing. And so one piece, any advice I give probably is not going to make any difference to the upcoming season. I guess the advice I have is there's a lot of pressures in your decision-making in terms of logistics, in terms of the economics and agronomy and nutrient management. There's all these big factors and there's a lot of financial consequences to those ones. I guess my advice, and you know, I'm not saying that this is going to be anything groundbreaking, but as you are managing your surface, you're also managing the hydrology. That is going to be a really big factor in your outcomes. And so a lot of agronomy, you know, and a lot of crop science and stuff, it's all about trying to like tweak those little bits over the long term. At the end of the day, for most of the prairies, we're water limited. What you do in terms of your water management, which is basically what this is, can have large implications on an interannual basis. There's some work from back in the day down towards Swift Current from the Ag Canada group there. At one point, they were showing 50 to 75% of the variability in your crop production was a function of the water. It wasn't the nutrient management. It wasn't the agronomy, that kind of stuff. That was important for that 25 to occasionally 50%. But water is going to be this thing that chronically will be there. So you can't lose sight of that.
Sadly, we can't control the weather, but we can control what we do. So hopefully that plays a factor in it, like you said. So what's next for you? What are you currently working on? And what do you hope to work on in the future? Is there anything that you are working on agriculture related? Are you shifting your focus?
What I'm working on is basically trying to come up with some modeling tool that connects cold regions, hydrology, snow, and crop production for the prairies. Like we like to go and measure everything we possibly can, but that's impossible. So we tend to, as a hydrologist, we take all our observations and lump them into hydrological models, and then we can start playing around. So within that work, I'm trying to hopefully get to the point where we can start evaluating the implications of different crop management practices in terms of, say, crop water use, optimization, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, in what year does it make sense to maximize residues? In what year does it make sense to work on your stubble? And can we predict those things? So that's the immediate I've been working on through the Global Water Futures Program at the U of S here for the last number of years. And that's been great. But like all research projects, they do come to an end. And so, yeah, you know, the future after that is there's still a bunch of question marks. But at the end of the day, yeah, I'm hoping that I can keep working on these things because, yeah, water and agriculture, they are intrinsically related. And it's going to be key to manage the extremes that we experience on a regular basis and any changes that are to come.
Well, we look forward to following along with whatever you are working on. Thanks for joining us today, everyone. If anyone is interested in following along with the science of snow and water, they can follow you on Twitter or his website is philipharder.ca.
Thank you for listening to the Wheat Profit Podcast. For more information on wheat agronomy, policy and advocacy, and wheat research, please visit our website at saskwheat.ca.